This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore, and we are talking with State Senator Joan Lovely, Salem, but represents folks from Beverly, Peabody, Danvers, Topsfield, and of course Salem as well. So, Senator, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. And there's so many different things to talk about with you as the legislature in the Senate is in session right now, a lot of things happening. But I guess let's start with your the Commonwealth conversations where senators are going around the state having meetings in communities and regions, rather, to discuss issues. And tell us about the next one, which is going to be in our area, Tuesday, April 11th.
Yes, so next Tuesday, April 11th, we're going to be having a Commonwealth conversation right here in my district, where at 8 o'clock in the morning, a number of senators will meet. We will meet at the Peabody Police Station. We will board a bus, and then we will embark throughout the district. We will drive over to Chelsea to go to ROCA, and ROCA is has to do with disadvantaged youth and imprisonment. So we're going to have a tour of that facility. Then we will go to Lynn, to the Lynn Museum, where we will do a two-hour presentation on transportation. We invite the public into that particular two-hour presentation to be able to tell us what your thoughts are of our transportation system, not just in our area, but across the Commonwealth, what your feelings are about it, what's working, and what, more importantly, what isn't working. We will then go to Malden. We will walk downtown Malden and look at different economic initiatives in the town setting. And then we will head back to Peabody, to the Peabody Middle School, the Higgins Middle School. That's a brand new school, just opened last year, where we will invite everyone in. We usually have about 200 people that will show up. And over the course of 2 hours, we want to hear from you and tell us what your thoughts are. We usually have at least half the Senate, so 20 senators will be there to listen to you. So it's we bring the Senate on the road. It's a very unique approach. And what we do with that information at the end of these nine sessions that we will have accomplished all across the Commonwealth is to take that information, put that together in a report, and that actually will help shape our legislation going forward and our agenda for the Senate for this session. And then at the end of next year, when we are completed our session, we will then issue another report and tell you how we did with what the citizens of the Commonwealth want us to do.
Now, you've already gone to a few of these, so what are you hearing from people? Is there a theme that you're hearing repeatedly during these sessions?
We are hearing a lot of repeated themes. There's a lot of anxiety out there with what's happening at our national level. People are feeling anxious, and so we really do think that people are showing up to kind of tell us what their anxieties are. And also to tell us that they're feeling pretty energized and engaged, and they want to be more part of the political process. So that's been really terrific. A lot of things we're hearing about immigration. We're hearing about healthcare reform, what might be coming out of the national level and how it'll affect the states, especially our state. We're hearing a lot about criminal justice reform and how people would like to see less people in prisons, not more. And the legislature will be taking up a very large bill this session on that, so it's good to hear from people about that. And we're hearing, you know, a lot from, you know, individual people who may have issues with disability, a lot about, you know, our education system. We are hearing a very broad range of issues. And, again, it's very helpful to us. And I think people really appreciate the fact that 20 senators will be sitting in front of them listening and not talking. We sit and listen for 2 hours, and then we take that information, and we take that back to the State House.
I'm thinking people aren't too bashful right now. They're willing to share their thoughts with you.
Rick?
What's the mechanism for taking this information and putting it together? You said you put a report together, but do you have meetings, follow-ups? Do you have small groups? How does that work?
So I actually have to give a big shout out to all of our staffs that are staffing us through these. So all of this is all recorded. I actually work right on my cell phone to take notes for each of these town meetings that we're holding. They take that information back, and we put that together. We break it down into groups and policy areas. And then we talk as a Senate during caucus. We will talk and decide, you know, what we're already working on or some maybe new initiatives that people have brought to our attention that we haven't really thought about. I also want to give a shout-out to Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr from Gloucester. He also is a very big part of he's actually co-chairing these Commonwealth Conversations with our Senate President, Stan Rosenberg. And a special shout-out to Senator Mike Rodericks from Westport. This was actually his brainchild that we did last session. And we had such a good experience last session, we wanted to repeat it this session as well.
I'm surprised at the anger that I've seen locally. I mean, Salem comes to mind. You talked about the immigration situation, I guess, and I'm surprised that neighbor, in some cases, is neighbor against neighbor. And that seems to me to be new, but it seems to be something that had been bubbling below the surface for many years. How is that playing out when you come to these meetings? Are there people there who are – is there a lot of anger that's expressed?
So during these Commonwealth Conversations, we're hearing a lot of people. Now, these are more progressives that are coming, activists that are coming to these meetings, but hearing a lot about wanting to support the immigrant community, the current immigrant community that is here, including undocumented immigrants, but also the bigger conversation about how can we fix our immigration system. You know, how can we allow a path to citizenship without telling people they need to leave our country and then come back in through the traditional method? That's probably why we have a lot of undocumented here in the first place. So unique to Salem, Salem decided to take it all the way to an ordinance, to enact an ordinance, which is a very big deal. Beverly did it a little differently. Beverly, the Beverly mayor, decided to do a mayor proclamation to support the immigrant and undocumented community. Peabody has yet to really take which direction they may go in. As the state senator for the five communities that I represent, I want to be supportive of all five and not come out in favor of one method over another. So although I would like to see a path to citizenship, I want to see each community be able to take this on individually and to be able to support their immigrant communities. So I'm not saying that Salem did it any better than Beverly or what Peabody might do or Danvers or Topsfield if they decide to do anything as well. I want them to know at the state level I support whatever they want to do. I do want to bring up a bill that's been proposed, the Safe Communities Act, at the state level by Senator Eldridge. This, again, would make Massachusetts all like a sanctuary state. I read the bill. It's pretty comprehensive. I do have to say I have some questions about it and some issues, particular to crimes that are committed by an undocumented person. It actually eliminates any crimes that are committed out of the district court jurisdiction, and those would include domestic violence, childhood sexual abuse, and some other types of crimes that I think we really can't take off the table for anybody. So I have some questions about the bill that I'll be meeting with Senator Eldridge about, but I want to make sure that when we're going to detain or deport an undocumented criminal, that we're being very mindful of the types of crimes that we're saying are okay to be committed and not okay to be committed. So I've got some questions about that, but I look forward to kind of working out those questions, with my colleagues.
I'm not sure how to ask this one, Bill, but the difference between a federal mandate or federal law or a federal order or even an executive order, and then how a state handles the situation, because it seems to me what you're talking about is getting in the trenches and you're working with people eyeball to eyeball, which is what the state does, but that's not what we're seeing on television. We're seeing these broad sweeping things. So how does the state handle the political tidal wave that comes from the administration, from Washington, in terms of just balancing everything? Because I'm sure there are funds tied to it that kind of intertwines everything.
So there are funds that are tied to this, and we're listening to the rhetoric that is coming from the national government right now, from our president, about funds being kept not given to the different states or cities and towns. That has a tremendous amount of impact and meaning. We're talking billions of dollars. We're talking $11 million for Salem alone should President Trump decide to come in and say, well, you're now a sanctuary city, quote, sanctuary city. We're going to retain that $11 million. There is kind of on both sides, some people think that that's a real threat, and some people think that isn't a threat at all. I don't have the answer to that, to be honest with you. I think we need to be mindful of that. I did read the Salem Ordinance, and the Salem Ordinance actually does codify federal and state law, that the city will not defy federal and state law when it comes to detaining people that may be arrested and then go through the police department and then into our house of correction as they're being processed through with committing a crime. But I think we still have some unanswered questions, and I think we just need to be mindful of that. I also wanted, one thing about the ordinance, I didn't want it to give, or I hope it doesn't give a false sense of security to our undocumented neighbors, because it can't protect immigration from coming in and detaining someone. So remains to be seen what the fallout from this will be, but Salem felt it had to go in this direction, and that's what they did.
I want to follow up on maybe the theme that Rick brought up, and that's the reaction from the federal, from the federal, say, budget, for example. In other words, the president released a budget draft the other day, and I know I've talked to a couple of other legislators, is that a lot of talk, on Beacon Hill would be, how do we react to all of this, or what's the impact of all of this? You don't know what's going to get passed, what won't get passed. So, aside from immigration, what's the buzz, say, at the Capitol as far as, reacting to some possible changes, big changes in the federal budget, which would then aid the state budgets?
So, for instance, we're watching our health care, and our health insurance. So right here in Massachusetts, we started first in the nation to have health care for all. And we actually were doing very well with that. When Obamacare came into effect, we were mandated actually to follow the Obamacare mandate, and which is patterned after what we already did here in Massachusetts, but with some changes. It actually cost our state millions of dollars to actually then go over and kind of convert over to Obamacare. So we have our health insurance. We have 97% of our people are insured, and we want to keep it that way. We still are looking at trying to keep those costs down. But when you look at the federal government, with what our president did recently was saying with trying to overturn health care, obviously it failed, but I don't think that that's the last time they're going to take a stab at that. It's going to come back at us. So working very closely with the administration, with the governor, Ways and Means, both, the state and the House and the Senate, working very closely together. We actually do it right here in Massachusetts, that we have a very bipartisan approach, and we work together. So we still don't know yet, though. We still don't have the answers yet to what's going to happen at the national level. But we do know that we work very closely together here, so we're gonna figure it out.
I have a follow-up about that, because I've talked with Senator Tarr many, many times, and I've never asked him this question. But, yeah, it's bipartisan here in Massachusetts. Certainly at the local level, you don't even know Republicans from Democrats for the most part. But at the state level, how bipartisan is it in that there's such an overwhelming Democratic majority, and then we have, of course, Senator Tarr, and you have the governor on the other side. But how bipartisan is that in fact?
That's a very good question, and I can only speak on the Senate side. Now I'm going into my fifth year, so my third term, and there's a tremendous amount of respect for our Republican colleagues, even though it's lopsided. There's 40 members. There are 34 Democrats and 6 Republicans. But Senator Tarr is very well respected and works very closely with the Senate President on a lot of the issues, a lot of the bills that are put before us. I would call them a real partnership, very much teamwork. We have a lot of joint caucuses where we caucus together. to discuss ideas. So I probably the optics on that, you wouldn't think that would be the case, but it actually is the case.
I want to ask you a two-part question here. Just for our listeners, maybe you could share with us the committees that you are on very briefly, but then tell us about a bill that you're sponsoring or, you know, aware of, the sexual abuse prevention bill. And so maybe that's too many questions in one here, but I know you can handle that.
So I'm very proud that I actually moved into leadership for this new session. I've been named as an assistant majority whip. So I'm very proud and honored to be able to do that and to be pulled up into leadership to work with shaping the Senate agenda going forward. The other committees that I sit on, I'm vice chair of State Administration and Regulatory Oversight. That has to do with public records, lobbying, all public buildings, all public land. It's an important committee. It's a bit like watching paint dry, but it's a very technical committee, and I like the technical aspect of it. I'm also vice chair of Children, Families, and Persons with Disability. I wanted to be able to stay on that committee. A lot of important work that we're doing. I'm also on the Public Health Committee and Tourism Committee, and I am the Senate chair of the Ellen Story Commission on Postpartum Depression, as well as on a special Senate Opiate Committee. I just got named to another committee to look at putting the legislature under the purview of public records. Currently, you know, it's interesting. I was trained as a city councilor for 15 years, fell under public records law, go up to the State House, don't have to comply with public records law. I actually have my own policy in my office with complying with public records, so if someone's looking for something out of my office, they can have everything except for a constituent file, because constituents are contacting us about some very sensitive information, so those I do not disclose, but what are you looking for? If I have it, you can have it. With regard to the second question, which is about an omnibus bill that I filed this session on childhood sexual abuse prevention, we know that 90% of childhood sexual abuse goes unreported. 90%. So 10% gets reported. That's unacceptable to me. So we're taking a look at expanding, for example, some pieces of this bill, expanding mandated reporters. We actually want to expand that to coaches. Voluntary coaches are not mandated reporters. And we don't want to chill someone becoming a voluntary coach. We're talking parents. My husband coached our kids in softball, Little League, soccer. We want everyone to be... to encourage them to stay as voluntary coaches. But we want to use this as a bit of a learning tool, so you would take maybe a 20-minute tutorial online about what to look for from a child that you may see, that you're looking and saying there's something not quite right, and be able to feel comfortable to be able to report. Not everybody has to be a mandated reporter to report what something that they might see, but we want this to be used as an education piece. Another piece of the bill has to do with inappropriate relationships between teachers, and we're talking high school teachers and students. We've read about it in the news where a teacher had a relationship with, say, a 15-year-old. It's not illegal to do that. We're going to actually put pieces in place there that is a crime to do that. We also want to be, sensitive to student-to-student relationships. But so we're inserting what they call a Romeo and Juliet clause, so that student-to-student depends on the age gap, will be held harmless. This really is between a superior, as an educator, as a teacher, and a student who is not mature enough to understand that type of relationship. We also, another piece of the bill is what we call pass the trash, and that has to do when an educator is suspected, strongly suspected, and the school system decides to just let them go. Sometimes they'll do a confidentiality agreement where they'll say, okay, we're not going to press charges. You just go on and go get a job somewhere else. The problem is they do go on and get a job somewhere else, and the receiving school district doesn't know that they've had this type of history. So we actually want to be able to say, no, whatever you put in that confidentiality agreement may not stick if it has to do with an inappropriate sexual relationship with a student. So I've actually received a lot of support on this bill. I was very fortunate not to have an opponent last fall, so I knew I would be returning to the State House, so we started working on it in the fall, and we started to meet with Department of Education, and we met with the Children's Trust, all different types of advocates for children, but also met with Committee for Public Counsel Services. We've met with the district attorneys. Anybody that may come in contact with children, we want to be able to say, here's the bill, and we treat it as a working draft because we want to say, what do you like about the bill, but what do you think won't work? So we should be having a hearing coming up at some time in the session, and I look forward to working with my colleagues on this.
That is, wow, that's huge. Of course, Bill and I, both as educators, were mandated reporters, and I was involved in an incident once. But to protect kids and protect the vulnerable, I guess, is huge. And will there be a way when I reported it, it was obvious. You know, I saw something that was gross and obvious. But a lot of times people have suspicions and they won't report and then something happens. So will this help people, I don't know, confidentially get information to the proper people? Is that the idea?
Yes. So one of the things that we did find out was that a lot of times a teacher will see something and they'll report up to the school administration, and that always didn't get reported out. So actually part of the bill is that the administration report back to that teacher who reported up and said, we reported out or we're not reporting out. So that teacher then has the ability in confidence to be able to report out. So we just want to put some tools in place so that if people really feel that they do want to report, it gets reported out.
And the loaded question, what about clergy?
So we think, or from what I recall from the, they're now mandated reporters, clergy are.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. So that was about the whole, with the whole archdiocese. So clergy are now mandated. Yeah.
And there's a, on this bill, there's a, it involves public schools, but it also can involve private schools. Is that correct?
That is correct. So kind of the missing piece with the private schools is currently there's with the reporting, but it all comes under licensing. So all public school teachers are licensed, but private schools and including charter schools, some charter teachers are not licensed. So there was no mechanism to report. This will now include unlicensed teachers as well.
Well, Senator, is there anything else you want to share with us here? Is kind of an open-ended, kind of a wrap-up question here for you as, some of the things you've been doing, some of the things ahead, or anything along those lines?
So I'm happy to be partnering with Representative Lori Ehrlich from Marblehead regarding the lead in our water. So we're actually, still seeing some issues where we have lead in the water, especially in some of our public schools or public buildings. Unacceptable. Children are, as we know, we have a very strong lead law, and children are so sensitive to any type of lead exposure. So I was very pleased that she called me and asked me to sponsor the bill on the Senate side, and we're getting some good support and feedback from it. So we'll continue to work on that, and just an opportunity to tell people that we really want to hear from them. Whatever method is good, I get Facebook messaged, tweets, emails is always a good way, joan.lovely@masenate.gov, or give the office a call at 617-722-1410. It's really terrific to hear from people. That's why, again, I'll circle back about this Commonwealth Conversations. It's so helpful to hear from folks so that we know what's on your mind, so that we can really represent you you know, adequately. So I really, and a policy in my office, people will ask me to sign on to a bill, and I'll say, listen, let me wait to hear from the rest of my constituency. I don't want to say yes or no right out of the gate. I like to hear from people, so I like to hold kind of, I hold it open, and then we solicit feedback about what people are feeling. So it's, I'm really enjoying the job, and I hope that people know that we are available. I have office hours every Monday morning at either a different Council on Aging in each community, or we are actually taking it out into the communities in a coffee shop. But I'll meet you anywhere, wherever it might be. I don't want to have people come into Boston. That's too much for people to have to drive in and come to my office. I'll meet you here in the district, wherever you'd like.
Hey, I'll just follow up on the lead water piece. When I talked to Representative Ehrlich last week about this piece, I was surprised that it was even an issue. You know what I'm saying? That I think we've gotten rid of lead paint. We've gotten rid of lead and water, or I thought. But we have, in the sense that until it comes to maybe a building, then the piping from the street into the building could have lead in it, and that's where a lot of this happens. But since that time, she shared some interesting stats with me that it's more of a problem than we think, first of all. And yet, then I watched a television commercial within the last 2 days where there was a device to put on your water to take out the lead. And that's an issue that I really had not really heard too much about at all, I don't think, in a long time.
You know, before, in a past life, I was a realtor. I sold real estate for about 20 years. So anytime I would go into a house, I always wondered, and I would look, especially during a home inspection when you had a property under agreement, I would follow the home inspector around, whether I had the seller side or the buyer side, and always went to the water meter and said, is that a lead service coming in? And every single time, because I wanted to make sure that, it was copper that was coming into the house. But I've seen lead services, and when my husband and I bought our house back in 1981, it was a lead service coming in. Had it changed out right away, because we know. But not everybody knows, and there's a lot of people that rent. They're not going down in their basement to see if they have a lead service coming into their house. They probably wouldn't even know what a lead pipe looked like. So this is what we need to do to protect our most vulnerable population, our kids.
Yeah, in four schools. All right. Senator Lovely, yeah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. The opportunity.
Senator Joan Lovely, along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell here on MSO News Sports.